If we were living in the 19, around 1900, we would hear of this unprecedented invention of an aircraft. And we would have never heard of an aircraft before. And maybe we would think that's absurd. How can something take off the ground and fly in the air and not crash? And yet today we know, we see it every day. We've probably all flown somewhere and been on an airplane because it's probably pretty rare to find someone who has not flown on an aircraft. And yet when if we lived in the 1900s and we heard of this invention, we might have thought, say what? That's absolutely absurd. That's crazy. That's foolishness. But and we didn't live in the, I don't think any of us are that old that we lived in the 1900. But we did live when this thing started being into position, right? I mean, this was an invention. It's amazing that this is our little computer in our hands, and we can do just about anything, even right now, right? We're on a screen. What, 25 years ago, could we believe that we could be on a screen across the country and really across the world and have this type of communication that I would be sitting in my office in Massachusetts preaching a sermon via a screen? So these inventions, when you hear about them, we tend to think that's foolishness, don't we? Or we tend to think it's absurd, or we're like, say what? And yet, when we look at the Bible and the stories of what God asked people, quite often it's, I mean, I know we're familiar with it, but if we were reading it for the very first time, or we were the characters, we would quite often say what, God? Did you really say that? Did I hear you correctly? Is this really what you want me to do? I mean, this is unprecedented. It's foolish. It's absurd. And so the question I want us to consider today, what is our response when God asks the absurd of us? What is our response when God asks the unprecedented of us, which usually when he asks us to do something, it seems absurd or it seems foolish. And the character I want to look at today, although we could look at lots of them, is Noah. And I think his story is just full of absurdity, unprecedentedness, and yet God speaks to him and asks him to do the unprecedented. And we find his story in Genesis 6, chapter 6 to 9. And I do want to read a little of it in chapter 6. I don't know if you have your Bibles there, but I'm going to read starting with verse 9 in chapter 6. I'm not going to read all of it. I'm sure we're all pretty familiar with it. But in Genesis 6:9, it says, "This is the account of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, 'I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. And I'm surely going to destroy both men, both them and the earth. So make for yourself an ark of cypress wood.'" And then he gives the dimensions. So skipping down to 17, he then says, "I'm going to bring flood waters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. And you are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you, two of every kind of bird, every kind of animal, every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. And you are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them." Now, I don't know about you, but I know if God said that to me, I would say, what? What are you talking about? I mean, this is unprecedented, isn't it? First of all, yes, Noah can see that the people are corrupt and he is righteous. So that's not so shocking or surprising. But what God says next is pretty surprising, isn't it? I'm going to wipe out all the people. God, really? You're going to wipe out all the people? I mean, is this a great plan? And not only am I going to wipe them out, but I'm going to wipe them out, but I'm going to flood the whole earth. Now, I'm sure Noah has never seen probably even a flood, let alone the whole earth. And he probably has no clue how big the earth is because he doesn't have what we have, the technology to show us all around the world in 3 minutes or less, right? We can see that on the news, but Noah doesn't have that. He hasn't flown in an airplane. He probably never has even been in a boat. And he probably lives in this arid area. And so if he's seen a flood, maybe it's on a small scale, but God's talking epic scale, isn't he? So I don't know. Did I hear God right that he's going to flood the whole earth? How is this going to come about? Because those are the questions we would have, wouldn't we? Like, God, how are you going to do this? This is unprecedented. And then if it's not enough just to try and absorb that information, he goes on and he says, and I want you to build an ark. A what? An ark. And the dimensions he gives are 510 feet long, 85 feet wide, 51 feet high. I mean, you can't hide that somewhere, right, in your shed and then bring it out later. You can't hide it on the other side of the trees. I mean, you're going to have to build this thing out in a humongous field where everybody's going to see it, and they're going to make fun of you, aren't they? And then if this is not all enough, he says, I want you to bring two of every kind of animal, living creature, on the boat. Rhinos, hippos, lions, tigers, giraffes, mosquitoes, poisonous snakes. I mean, how is he going to do this? So all of this is unprecedented. All of it is absurd. All of it sounds like absolute foolishness, doesn't it? And so we ask ourselves, how am I going to respond when God asks the absurd of me? Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to believe. And sometimes, if we're honest with ourselves, that takes a little bit more time than what we would like it to take, doesn't it? I mean, I know if I were Noah, there's no way I would have believed that the moment God said it to me. I would have said, I don't think I heard him correctly. Maybe I had too much hot fudge before I went to bed and I had some wild, crazy dream or something. I think I'd really struggle with what he said because it's just so big, flooding the earth, making an ark, putting animals on this, having enough food for everybody. How are these animals going to get along with each other? Can't you just see total chaos in this little floating boat? And so I think it would be hard to believe this. And then, speaking of the boat floating, it doesn't even have a helm. So Noah doesn't even get to control it. It's only designed to float. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be on some closed-in big boat that I can't control with these wild animals, and it's just designed to float. I mean, this is all absurd, isn't it? When we really stop and think about it. And so I think if I'm with Noah, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around all of this. And then, of course, I think our natural response is, well, how are you going to do this, God? How are you going to make this happen? And I have a feeling Noah wasn't probably a boat craftsman, right? So he probably didn't have the tools, had no idea how to build a boat, doesn't have the resources. And so he's got to believe in God making the provision for this boat too, right? And how does he do that? And so there's lots and lots of questions that I'm sure that Noah had. But the first thing he needs to do is believe what God said to him. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was called to ministry, I said, say what? I think you've got the wrong person. I think I am on the do not call list. And so I struggled with my call for a long time. I didn't say yes for a long time. As a matter of fact, I was more like Jonah and I ran away. And Jonah spent 3 days in the belly of the fish. I spent 3 years. And finally, I said, okay, I'm tired of being in the belly of the fish. I'm tired of the mess I'm making of my life. So, yes, God, I will say yes to you. But so I don't know. I mean, the beauty of God is he gives us grace, right? If he's going to give us something so unprecedented and absurd, does he expect us to believe it in the moment that he gives it to us? Or does he give us time to process it? Does he give us time to talk it out? Does he give us time to let it sink in so we can say, yes, I believe in this? My whole situation with Tappy, she was in South Africa, I was in North America, and God began to reveal to her when I had come home from my second semester at the college where I taught and where she where I met her. God began to talk to us about her coming to school here, which was absurd. I had a little church of 20 people. I was barely making it financially. And I had no children. And so now I'm going to get one who's 21 years old, who's already been raised, who comes from another culture and climate. And now she's coming to the United States. She doesn't want to come to the United States. She had come and done an internship with me at my church. She came in December, the worst month of the year here in New England. And she comes from a southern climate. So when it got dark at 4 o'clock, she's like, what is this? I said, welcome to New England. Of course, she didn't have winter clothes. I had to get her winter clothes. She didn't like the food and she'd never seen snow and it snowed. So when she went home, she said to her family, I will never go back to the United States again. And then God began to speak to both of us about her coming here and going to school. And so it was absurd for her to come and leave Africa, her family, her culture, and come to North America. And it was absurd for me to think, how am I going to provide and pay for college education? And so it was absurd and foolish. And so it took time. Thankfully, God didn't say, okay, this is going to happen next month. He gave us a year to process all of that. And of course, you've got to get visas and, get accepted into college, all those things, which we're very familiar with. So thankfully, it didn't have to happen overnight. And we had time to process it and believe it. And then I think we're probably familiar with George Mueller, who was the missionary in the 1800s who set up orphanages, five large orphanages that served hundreds of thousands of children. And God asked the absurd of him. And I think he says it well when he said, God put the desire in my heart to open an orphanage with no money. And it's up to God to provide the funds. And I believe he will. So it's not only just believing when God asks the absurd, it's do I believe that God is going to provide what I need? Is he going to provide the skills I need to build a boat? Is he going to not only a boat, but a rather large ark? Is he going to provide the resources? Is he going to provide the manpower? And so at some point, Noah has to come to that place and say, not only do I believe God's plan, but I believe God will provide for the plan. And so those are two different things that we have to wrestle with as well. And I had to believe that God gave me the vision and Tappy the vision to come to the United States. But then I had to believe that God was going to provide financially for her schooling. And the first year she arrived, I didn't work the first year. I was in a panic. Like, how am I not working? I have an extra person to take care of. Now we have tuition. And God provided again and again and again because it was his plan, his vision. And so we have to believe that. And then the next step, we have to obey, don't we? I mean, it's one thing to say, yes, I believe you called me to ministry. Yes, I believe you're going to flood the earth and I need to build an ark. And yes, I believe that these animals are, I'm going to go out there and get them, or you're going to put them on the boat. But we actually have to act on it, don't we? So when I finally said yes to my call to ministry, I had to start the process, talk to my pastor, and get confirmation by others that they saw that God was calling me into ministry. And then we know we have to get our education. And so all of that has to happen. And so we have to act and do what God has asked us to do. And in 6:22, the word says Noah did everything just as God commanded him. Noah did what God asked him to do. He didn't just sit back and say, oh, okay, go ahead, God, make that all happen. Boom, you can make the impossible possible. But he had to act. And I'm sure it was pretty tough building an ark that the biblical scholars say, you know, took up to 120 years. And again, it wasn't hiding in the shed or behind the trees anywhere. All the corrupt people would have seen him making this. And they would have, you know, teased him, insulted him, tried to demoralize him, thwart him off his mission that God had given him. And yet he stays the course. And we know that the enemy does that with us as well. When we say yes to God and we start obeying God, that the enemy is going to do whatever he can to thwart us, confuse us, demoralize us, insult us, try to get us off God's plan and mission for us. But thankfully, we stay strong in him and we obey and do what God has asked us to do. And so the result of that, I love, is when we flip over to Hebrews 11, the great hall of faith, with all the hall of faith, not all of them, but the big ones listed in this chapter, right? We've got the all-star champions of faith. And there we find Noah in chapter 11, verse 7. And what does it say? By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. And by his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. And at the end of my chapter 11, I have by faith, Lisa. So again, we go back to the question we started with, right? What do we do when God asks the absurd of us? Do we believe? Do we obey? If we do, we become living testimonies, living witnesses of what God has done, how he's made the unprecedented possible, the impossible possible. The absurd has come to fruition. The foolishness is no longer foolish, but real. And so Noah, not only was he a living testimony at the time that he built the ark, but he's been a living testimony for generations, thousands of years, and will continue to be a testimony for thousands of years. And I can't wait to get to heaven and get into seeing the great hall of faith, right? All those all-star champions. And I'm sure Moses is going to be up there and he's going to have a huge portrait, and Abraham and Noah. I just want a little one, just a little one, that I walked by faith, that when God asked the absurd of me, the unprecedented of me, I believed, I obeyed, and I am a living witness to the God who calls us to the absurd, to the unprecedented. And so the question that I'm going to leave us with today is, what are you going to do when God asks the absurd of you? Are you going to believe? Are you going to obey? Are you going to be living witnesses? And I'm sure your answers are yes, or we wouldn't be on this screen together. But we also know people that have chosen not to believe, chosen not to obey, and chosen not to be living witnesses. And certainly, we don't find them in the Bible. Certainly, we're not going to find them in the great hall of faith in heaven, but may we continue to say, yes, God, I believe you, I obey you, want to obey you, and I want to be a living witness when you ask the unprecedented or the absurd of us. Amen.